This is the Blaze Radio On Demand.
You looking to sell your home? At realestateagentsitrust.com, our goal is to ease the stress of home selling by helping you sell your home as quickly as possible at the best price possible. Hi, it's Glenn Beck, and I want to thank you. In just the last few months, thousands of Blaze Radio listeners just like you have contacted our agents. So if you're thinking of selling your home, or if you want help buying a home, go to realestateagentsitrust.com and let our individually selected agents earn your business. realestateagentsitrust.com.
Yet again today, thanks so much for joining us. Okay, so we have some new information. You know, a lot of times we talk about issues and then years later you find stuff out. We have new information on the Gang of Ocho bill. It's become a hot issue again with Marco Rubio running for president. Remember the Gang of Ocho bill where eight members got together, eight members of the House of the
Senate. It's bipartisan, Doc.
Right. Four bipartisan. Four Republicans and four Democrats in the Senate got together and said, we, the Gang of Ocho, the eight of us, can come together and come up with a plan to fix immigration in America. And, of course, as a cornerstone, they offered a new pathway to citizenship, basically saying if you're here illegally, we're going to keep you here. And Marco Rubio has been under a little bit of fire. But now, years later, we have new information. This is really, really important. Marco Rubio said he never intended for it to become a law.
I'm sorry?
He never intended for it to become a law.
Okay, why then, if he didn't intend for it to become a law, did they build this whole big bipartisan, reaching across the aisle, eight people getting together to solve one of the big nation's problems, and it was never intended to become law? Well, what was it intended to become?
Skip. That was a starting point. They thought the House would make it even better.
How?
It'd make it better.
Okay, I'll even give you that. Say that's the truth. How? How are you going to make it better, that is your argument?
Well, based on the fact that he's running for president and a bunch of conservatives are like, I can't vote for this guy because he supported amnesty, maybe he meant even better, like, take out the amnesty part.
Maybe.
Maybe that, because if it wasn't that, I'm sorry, I'm out.
No, I think I got it.
What's
I think
that?
I figured it out. You know, obviously Donald Trump has been doing really well in this campaign. It's been surging. Maybe Marco Rubio just wants to make the Gang of Eight great again. make the Gang of Eight great again. Get little hats made up, little trucker hats. Make the Gang of Eight great again.
Make the Gang of Ocho Bill great again.
Okay, I'm okay
like
with that too, yeah.
Make it great something. So,
make amnesty great again, if we want to shorten it down.
Okay, I see where you're going with this. Make illegals great again.
Oh,
something
that
like
too.
That.
See, it's word economy here, though.
So, apparently he was relying on the House to make it even better. So, let me break this down for you. Initially, Marco Rubio runs for Senate and swears to people that he is absolutely 100% against amnesty or any form thereof. And a lot of people in Florida are like, wow, here is a Hispanic conservative that I really like anyways, and he's that staunch on immigration? Excellent. You're our guy. And they elect him. Tea Party gets behind him. And then as soon as he gets in there, he's like, yeah, we're going to do something with his amnesty. I can go ahead and join the Gang of Ocho because we got to do something, right? That's the argument. We got to do something. Then, while running for president, he has to answer for this. And he said, no. I've evolved on this. I've evolved because when they passed the Gang of Ocho, that was a different time. Now we're under terrorist threats.
See, and I hate that argument. How can you say that now we're under terrorist threats?
What are you talking about? I mean, we had the Boston bombing, we had the San Bernardino. You have all this stuff.
But those aren't the only examples of terror attacks in America in the past couple of decades.
When he did the Gang of Ocho, what terrorist attack? Name one.
9/11.
Oh, that little thing.
How about 9/11, the largest terrorist attack on American soil?
Okay, well, I guess that does count for something.
Killed just under 3,000 people. But no, we had never had any sort of an incident that might have required people to look at immigration.
Okay, so lies about it, flip-flops, pushed the Gang of Ocho bill, now claimed, was campaigning, and over the last couple of months that it was because things are different now, and now has evolved even farther, saying, well, I thought the House was going to make it even better. That was just a kind of a starting point.
And again, if that's the argument, I mean, why is it that the House would be making it any better? Shouldn't you have just made it better to begin with? What types of things were you hoping that the House were going to put in there? If those are things that you think would have made the bill better, why weren't they part of your version of the bill?
Oh, you expect him to do all the work? Can't the House do a little bit of work?
Yeah, I expect him to do the best job he can. If there were things in there that he thought were necessary and should have been part of this bill to make it better, they should have been part of his bill.
Sounds pretty lazy to me. I mean, why not just go for the gold? Just say, this is what I want. What's with the horse trading? What's with the sausage making? This is what I want. This is what I'm trying for. And the rest? Unacceptable, and you move on.
And why then, if this was something that he was so passionate about, was such a huge, interesting, a major issue that he had to join this bipartisan group, why would he left that up to chance that the House would do the right thing? If it was so important, why is that not information and stuff that he included within the bill himself? Because it's so important, we must act right now. But we're going to leave a bunch of crap up to the House.
I can only imagine a Marco Rubio presidency where he has the same attitude.
Ah.
You know, you were threatened with some sort of national crisis as far as being invaded or something. He's like, yeah, I was going to send in the troops, but...
I thought I'd call Canada first, see what they
thought. I thought they were
going to
make
it
better. Do some of it, only do a little bit, but see what they can come up with, because I got nothing. This is the best I could do. I'm sorry. This is it.
No, in fact, this right here just shows that Marco Rubio would probably be pretty inept as president and a sellout.
Yeah, because that's, I mean, look at the string of lies. I am so tired of this stuff. And the Republicans lining up to support Marco Rubio, you make me sick. In some ways, in many ways, I have more respect for the people that are supporting Donald Trump. Seriously, I really do. Because I can at least find some value in Donald Trump. Small as it may be, at least he's a jerk to the people in D.C. Now, when he gets there, he's not going to be a jerk to him. He's going to be selling out along with them. But at least I can take some satisfaction in that. Marco Rubio is just a jerk.
And it's a shame, too, because Marco Rubio has a pretty good record overall.
Pretty good.
Gang of Eight thing is really the only big shining thing you could take a look at as a huge, major, major fail. However, that's one of the big things that everything related to it has made it so much worse than it actually is.
There's some other things. I've done some research recently. He has some other pretty big fails. He was all about the TPP, man. He was all about giving the president the fast-track authority. He was all about voting for that Trans-Pacific Partnership and all of that. All about that nonsense. And when you look at his fails, you know what his fails have to do with? Marco Rubio is bought and paid for by the Chamber of Commerce and the crony corporatists in America today. That's it. In fact, I have reason to believe, based on some little things I've heard, I heard from a guy who heard from a girl who saw Ferris pass out at 31 Flavors last night that the Koch brothers like Marco Rubio quite a bit, too. Mm-hmm. Now, it's plenty of good that the Koch brothers do with their cash. They're fairly solid libertarians, but they also vote with the people who are going to do well for the cronies out there.
But you are saying today, I mean, on the air, that you believe Marco Rubio has a bit of a Koch problem.
I do, but he doesn't think it's a problem. I think it's a problem.
No, I know. I'm just saying. I mean there's some people who say they can reasonably use Coke like on the weekends and
right.
stuff.
No. It's a problem as how it affects him.
Okay.
You know, there's nothing wrong with him getting money from the Coke brother doing whatever, but when you start selling out on amnesty and things like this, I say, yeah, that's a problem with your, you know, use of the Coke brother's money.
I don't know. All I heard you say is that Marco Rubio has a Koch problem.
I'd say it is a Koch brother problem. K-O-C-H. Koch brothers. Got a bit of an issue there.
Oh, Miami area, too, could be a little
saying, you know, it's a little bit of a problem there. So, yeah. So just so you know, where we currently stand today, Marco Rubio really didn't want that Gang of Ocho bill to pass. He didn't want it to pass. Which is funny because that's the thing that he's hammered Ted Cruz on. Skip and I have been incredibly honest in our biases, and we're consistent, as always, on our morning radio program. And it is this. For the last year or so, Ted Cruz has been one of our front runners. We've liked a couple of other people, too, like Rand Paul, who just self-destructed. But we like the basic attitude and their track record on votes. So we've admitted that on the air. However, we've also taken Ted Cruz to task quite a bit because Ted has a bit of a problem when it comes to the Gang of Ocho bill. He has not left me completely convinced that he is against amnesty. He's explained away his support of the Gang of Ocho bill and that, offering that amendment. Kind of. It was kind of a poison pill. I can get a little bit of it, but there's part of it that doesn't make sense as well. But Marco Rubio has called him out about flip-flopping on that.
Repeatedly,
when Ted Cruz has said, I didn't want it to pass. That was Ted Cruz's argument that Marco Rubio has hammered him on. And now Marco's going, I didn't want it to pass either. You were one of the Gang of Eight. You own 1/8 of it. He didn't want it to pass, though.
By the way, we're just getting word to John McCain's now saying, yeah, that was BS. We didn't want it to pass either. I don't know what we were thinking, guys.
Yeah, he didn't want it to pass. Chuck Schumer didn't want it to pass. None of them did.
It's interesting, though, that this Gang of Eight bill is going to be something that's going to haunt not just one, but several of the candidates in this GOP race to the nominee.
As it should. Let me lay this out one final time in case you have not come to terms or put into perspective the failures of our immigration system. And keep in mind, what I say comes from a man who, if not for our immigration system, our legal immigration system, I would never have met my beautiful bride. My wife is an immigrant. She immigrated when she was a child, legally, from South Korea, along with her mother, who lives with us as well. These people are my life. This is my family. So I have a pretty good perspective on this, and I appreciate a healthy, strong legal immigration system, but I recognize it has to be legal, and you have to do it the right way. Yes, we have some flaws in our immigration system. The biggest flaw is a lack of enforcement of current immigration laws. Period. That's the biggest flaw. Now, there are some slightly smaller flaws. For example, the fact that it is so difficult to immigrate here. It takes a lot of money. It's not the effort that I have a problem with. It should take effort. You should say, I'm passionate about coming to America, and I'm willing to do what it takes. But it's really expensive. On average, over the course of getting your legal status and then becoming a citizen, it takes about $20,000. Well, we don't want or shouldn't want as a society just rich people having access to America. We want everybody to have access to it as long as you're the right sort of person. So it is a bit expensive. So we can make some adjustments there. But the biggest thing we have to do is enforce our laws. Now, how do you deal with current immigration system? Well, the reason they want this comprehensive is because they know they will not be able to get any type of amnesty passed unless they put it in with a big bill that does with everything that does everything else, including enforce the border. So, number one, secure the border and enforce our current immigration laws. Number two, go ahead and tweak our legal immigration system, make it a little cheaper. You can even open it up. Whatever we determine is the appropriate number of immigrants to come here. Whatever we can stand. Is it 2 million a year? Currently, it's about 1 million. Is it 10 million? Bring them in. I don't have a problem. It could be 20 million. If we say as a society we can sustain that, bring them in, make them Americans, put them on that pathway, it's going to make America stronger. I have no problem with that. If they have the right attitude about America, about freedom and the Constitution. But there can and should be no additional pathway to citizenship. We have a pathway to citizenship. It's called our current illegal immigration system, and they're just not abiding by it. The illegals are not, nor are people like Jeb Bush or Marco Rubio. So we have an immigration system. Enforce it. It's very frustrating for me.
I still think the biggest takeaway from this that's been underreported is the whole Marco Rubio with his coke habit.
All right, can we just move on from Marco Rubio now on that?
I'm just saying, I think that would be a bigger deal. I mean,
now, as far as the illegals that are here, how do you handle those? Kick them out. Make it difficult for them to be here and deport them. And the argument from people like John Kasich who say, oh, we can't possibly do that.
Why?
Why can't you?
No, why is it? And this is something that you and I have laid out before several times, too. Why is it that you can't round up all the illegals and deport them? Just because we can't catch every person who's speeding down the freeway doesn't mean we've just said, okay, well, you can speed down the freeway now. No, enforce the laws that are there and kick the people out that aren't supposed to be here. We've made it de facto legal to come here illegally. It's no longer illegal to come here illegally.
This is what I'm tired of. People make these blanket statements like, we can't possibly kick everybody out. We can't kick everybody out. And everyone just goes, oh, yeah, you're right. We can't kick them out. Sorry. And then it becomes a talking point for people on the left or whomever. Why can't you kick them out? Explain it to me. In fact, I challenge Marco Rubio. Come on here. Explain it to me. John McCain. Hey, the phone lines are open. You know how to contact us. We've called your office many a time. Come on, sit down here. Come on our morning radio program, theblaze.com/radio, and explain it to us. Why, John Kasich, can we not kick them out? Oh, that's right, because the Koch brothers in the Chamber of Commerce said you can't kick them out. They want them there. Here's the dirty little secret when it comes to illegals. The Republicans want the illegals here so they get cheap labor, people they can manipulate, to take the jobs of Americans that are currently here. The Democrats want them here because they're future Democrat voters. And by that, I mean they're Democrat voters. They're, I think, the Republican voter until they die, and then they
become
Democrat.
That's the thing. Then it becomes it's a swap at that point, too. But until then. But no, that's what it's all about. It's all politics. All of this, it all comes back to politics. None of this has to do with doing the right thing or helping people to legitimate their lives and coming out of the shadows. All of this is about politics and getting further voters. And that is disgusting, trying to go ahead and exploit that for politics.
Well, you're right. Exploit that and then claim we're racist because of it, playing the race card, which then waters down the true issues of race in America, where people are actually targeted because of their race. It waters that all down and just ticks people like me off. By the way, speaking of racism, did you see Hillary Clinton's claim about Antonin Scalia and Obama replacing him? Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Hillary's saying basically the reason that somebody would step up and say President Obama shouldn't nominate somebody, it's all based on racism. That's all it is. They hate him because he's black. It's all about
racism. Does that surprise anybody at this point that Hillary's going to play the race card?
No, I mean, when do people get tired of that nonsense? When do you start calling these knuckleheads out? We'll give you more on that coming up. We'll also get some of your tweets, if you would. Follow me on Twitter, at Doc Thompson Show. You can also follow Skip. It's at Skip Lacombe. We'll use the hashtag What I Learned Today. More coming back on Pat and Stu.
When our water heater broke down last month, it was a nightmare. It took 5 hours for the plumber to show up, and he charged us a couple of $100 just to come out. Then it cost another $1,800 to put in the new water heater. By the time it was all said and done, I felt like I'd been taken. But what else could I do?
The smartest thing you can do is get a home warranty from American Residential Warranty. Their home warranties pay to repair or replace all your major appliances when they break, and they will break, and at the worst possible time. Call American Residential Warranty right now for free information on home warranties starting at just pennies a day. Don't wait for your refrigerator to stop running or your ceiling fans to stop turning. Call American Residential Warranty right now. Ask how you can save up to 50% on washer and dryer coverage. Just call 1-800-686-3910. That's 1-800-686-3910. Again, 1-800-686-3910. Call now.
Doc and Skip on Pat and Stew for today. Thank you so much for joining us. Back with you tomorrow as well. Coming up tonight, we'll also be pinch hitting for Dana on her television program here on the Blaze TV. So Hillary Clinton says the real reason that anybody like Mitch McConnell would come out and say that the president must not nominate anybody to the Supreme Court to replace Scalia right now is because they're racist. That's what it comes down to, Skip. It's racist. Can you explain that one to me, how it's racist?
I know I can't explain that to you because, I mean, quite frankly, it's not racist. It has nothing to do with race. Here's the deal. If it comes out that that the president nominates somebody like Loretta Lynch, who's a female, it's not only racist, it's sexist that they don't want to vote on at this point. This is the same old vein and road they go down every single time they want to make a point. Or they want to push something that Republicans have a problem with. They go down to racism, to sexism, or something along those lines that divide people up even further, and it's just complete BS.
A coded racial language.
Coded racial language.
That's what she said. It comes out. They're often using coded racial language.
Here's the deal. You know what Hillary should have said? The only reason the GOP doesn't want to confirm a nominee is because of bad D.C. politics. I would have applauded her on that.
Okay,
that's actually right. You know, it is. Mm-hmm. That is why. The reason why the Republicans don't want to, of course, it's politics. They want to wait until they can get one of their guys in there. It has nothing to do with racism or sexism. See, that's what's so frustrating about Hillary Clinton. She can actually make the point she's trying to make and make it honestly, but she doesn't. She goes back to the same old vein of, oh, it's racism and sexism. Don't say that, Hillary. Say it's politics. And I would have actually applauded your statement there. Well, but now you're just doing the same old thing you've been doing for your entire career.
And to say it's coded racial language. Isn't she being coded in what, to your point, she's being coded right there.
Absolutely.
What are you really trying to accomplish, Hillary? You're trying to bag on those people to gin up votes for yourself. That's coded. That's what you're doing there. You're not even being honest about why you really believe the Republicans are coming out and saying, no, he shouldn't nominate anybody, which we've told you is BS. Of course he should nominate somebody, and the Republicans in the Senate should do what they have to do, either confirm or not. That's not even politics. That's their job. But of course he should nominate somebody. And by the way, speaking of coded racial language, isn't it funny that they're so interested in detecting all of these secret problems in the world?
What do you mean?
Okay, you've got the hurt feelings on college campuses, right?
Of course.
We got to see if anything may offend somebody. Is that word perfect and it's coded language and all of this stuff? They're digging, trying to find problems. Meanwhile, there are some really big problems that they don't notice.
That they ignore completely.
Illegals.
I mean, it's so much at the point now where there's so many of these schools even have hotlines you can report 24 hours to record any sort of any times you've been made to feel uncomfortable on campus. And not just saying, oh, we have it available in case, but encouraging people to do that. Encouraging people to a step further within their bubble they live in and avoid interacting with the world.
We have got massive problems that you could just roll off the top of your head, from various things with the economy to ISIS, other forms of national security, terrorism, illegals, all of these things. And yet they're going, let's try to figure out that coded racial language because I think there may be a problem squirreled in here somewhere. How about that stuff? That's really big. How about taking care of that stuff? What are you straining at the gnat and swallowing the camel for? It's right there. Go after that. Fix that.
By the way, when Hillary was speaking, too, she continued saying, referring to the Supreme Court, saying that the president has the right to nominate under the Constitution,
yes,
which garnered huge cheers, which is interesting because the first time Hillary Clinton's ever mentioned the Constitution in any of her speeches.
Is it the first time?
No,
oh, I was like...
probably. I don't have that fact to be certain, but that certainly has been something that she's been going with for a while. And well, it's probably the first time, too, that it's garnered cheers from a crowd of Hillary Clinton, too.
By the way, when she said Constitution, it burned her mouth.
It was a little bit, yeah.
In the Constitution.
It's kind of like garlic.
Right, exactly.
Vampire, you know?
Constitution, something like that. Hillary Clinton obviously doesn't care so much about that. President Obama was called on the carpet about something he's done in the past. Okay, President Obama came out yesterday and was talking about his replacement for Justice Scalia. And, of course, went right to the, this is my responsibility, and any Republican who stands in the way is basically an obstructionist. This is going to be their narrative now. And as we said, they shouldn't stop him or tell him he shouldn't. Of course, he should. Stop him with your vote if you don't like who the nominee is, but of course he should do this. And then a reporter stood up and was like, hey, that's cool, but what about when you did that, when you were a senator? We have a clip for you. It's right here.
How do you respond to Republican criticism that your position is undercut by the fact that you and other members of your administration who were in the Senate at the time tried to filibuster Judge Alito in 2006?
You know, I think what's fair to say is that how judicial nominations have evolved over time is not historically the fault of any single party. This has become just one more extension of politics. And there are times where folks are in the Senate and they're thinking, as I just described, primarily about, is this going to cause me problems in a primary? Is this going to cause me problems with supporters of mine? And so people take strategic decisions. I understand that.
Huh. So the Republicans are obstructionists. But when they said, hey, when Alito was up there and you wanted to filibuster his appointment, that is different. That's historically not the fault of any one party.
That is incredible. See, the most amazing part of that is, how was the president not prepped on this question? Had he forgotten that in 2007 he tried to filibuster a Supreme Court
nominee? I don't think he thinks he's going to be challenged or doesn't care.
That's the thing, is he's got this arrogance about him that he never thinks he's going to be called to any
skip,
of this.
Skip, skip. No, it doesn't matter. We're hearing it, we're playing it, we're talking about it, but most people either don't care or will never play it. They heard it, it was like, shoom. I mean, that's what I really think. The left's going to defend him rabidly. The people in the middle, they don't care or even know who Justice Scalia is or was. And people like us, we will squirrel out the truth. So I just think they realize it doesn't matter now.
Well, I'm just surprised that politicians continue to give pundits an opportunity for things like this. It seems like every politician has completely forgot or has a blind spot that there's something that exists called YouTube, that you can go back and look at previous speeches and see what they've said and see their history. I don't know if they know about this, but there's an internet now that has a whole lot of information on
that. That's available on the interwebs,
it
right?
It is, at www.internet.com.
Here's the thing, Skip, that should matter. In fact, I thought foolishly 10 whatever years ago that we are entering an age where everybody's going to have access to everything that's ever been said by a politician, and that stuff will keep politicians honest. No, it hasn't. People like Clinton, even George W. Bush to a degree, and Barack Obama, they've realized if you can just ride the wave and just be like, oh, yeah, I said that, but that was blah, blah, and fade off into some nonsense, it doesn't matter. There are people in your camp on one side of the aisle that are rabid and going to defend you no matter what. There's people on the other side that are going to attack you no matter what, even if it's reasonable. And the people in the middle, what are they going to do? Not even pay attention. Oh, he got new shoes. I like those. Is he married to a Kardashian? Good, then I'll vote for him. That's what it comes down to with these people. You're right. It should matter, and it doesn't.
You realize in like 2040 and like 2048, we're going to be looking back like the Instagram accounts of these people who wanted to run for president when they were like 14 and 15 in school.
Yep.
That's going to be interesting.
And it will not matter. The Clintons proved that. If you are willing to take all of the crap that people dish out in the media, whether it's deserved or not, and just hang in there, it'll all blow over. Eventually, it'll blow over. I don't know what it takes for a president to have to resign. I mean, do you actually have to stand on Fifth Avenue and shoot somebody and kill him? I mean, is that what it is?
And because, even then, is that enough?
I mean, they say the exact opposite. Do the exact opposite thing. Think about what happened here. He is attacking the Republicans for being obstructionist, which is a nonsense term. Our government is supposed to be obstructionist. That's the beauty of America. It's supposed to be gridlock to ensure that not one party or side or the other just does whatever they want. You're not supposed to have a free pass. You're supposed to get in there and work with the other people and find common ground. So that's how it's supposed to work. But he charges them with being obstructionist because they say, wait a minute, we may filibuster or block your nomination, all of this stuff. Yet, when they say, hey, you did the same thing, what is his answer? Well, historically, it's not one party or another. Wait, today you said it's the Republicans. Historically, it's not. So he's saying today it's the Republicans, but when he did it, it wasn't one party or another.
No, that was for the good of the country at that point, Doc.
Oh, is that it? It wasn't one party or another?
You're completely missing this. No, that wasn't about the Democrats blocking the Republicans. That was about helping out America.
Then the end of it, what was that nonsense? He just trails off into, this is just politics today. Is that it?
Apparently, yeah. I mean, that's the vein. And he's right in that. This is just the politics of today. But why don't you say the same thing about yourself back in 2007 when you were filibustering? It was just politics. Again, like I said with Hillary Clinton, too, I would even have at least a modicum of respect for that.
Right. If the president had come out when that reporter had asked him a question and said, listen, that's a great question. I was wrong back then. I shouldn't have handled it that way. That was not the right way to handle it. I realize now, becoming president, blah, 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 all of this, and laid out and truly spoke from the heart, I would say, wow, that's a great answer, and I can respect it. You're still wrong, but I can respect it. You're just not as wrong. Because my objection then would have been, oh, so you figured out when you're the president now. How convenient. Right? What he should be saying is, Republicans, I did it. That's what we do. You're supposed to be obstructionist, whatever. And I'd be like, okay, at least he's being completely honest there. Or call out Chuck Schumer. If he had called out Chuck Schumer, because Chuck Schumer has
in
the past
said the same thing, exactly.
Right. And said the same thing. If he'd called him out and said, Chuck, you were wrong back then, so suck it up now. This is the world you've helped to create by things that you've said and done. Nope. The president is right about one thing. It is politics. But how come he is not held accountable by his own people? When people that I have supported, whether it's Ted Cruz or Rand Paul or somebody else, screws up, guess what? I hold them accountable and I charge them with the things that they are doing wrong. Where is that? Where is that from other people that are on the right in charging Donald Trump and his nonsense? I thought that most people on the right and Tea Party goers would do that. No, it's not the case. About half of them do. The other half are supporting Trump.
Exactly.
I mean, seriously, that's what it is. Mm-hmm. You have very short memories. We're going to get some of your tweets coming up and also move on to a very, very bizarre story out of Hollywood. I'm going to need your help with this one. This is so bizarre to me, I can only speculate why or what it means, and I'm sure I'm getting it wrong. So I'm going to need your help on Twitter, at Doc Thompson Show and at Skip Lacombe. We'll be back to share that story with you in just a moment. Pat and Stu today. Tweets coming in with the hashtag, what I learned today. It's currently almost 70 degrees in Dallas, but at Doc Thompson Show and at Skip Lacombe are dressed for skiing. Hashtag Arctic Studio from Lori D. Yeah, Lori, there's a couple things. The Arctic Studio is certainly part of it. Yeah. For whatever the reason, our boss, Glenn Beck, likes to keep this studio sub-zero. I don't know. Okay, we know the reason.
He wears 37 layers to work every day. That's his problem. I mean, he's got the style skills that if he could make like 13 costume changes by taking a shirt off.
But there's also...
Are you going with the...
No, I'm just saying that...
The extra padding.
That's a good way to put it. There's some extra padding, and sometimes that keeps you a little warmer. So it is always very, very chilly in here. Plus, Skip and I came here via Cleveland. We were at my folks' house for a week, and we made the trek to Dallas so that we had pretty much our winter stuff with us. And there was 18 inches of snow or so in just a couple of days in Cleveland. They just got hammered the whole time we were there. So,
by the way, I appreciate you inviting me on that trip to go back and visit.
I'm glad to have you along. It was a good time, whatever.
Deal with the lake effect snow and a foot and a half.
All right, so we're going to need your help on this thing. This is a story that is so bizarre, scary. But what all does this mean? Help me squirrel out some of the angles in this story. And you can tweet them at us again, at Doc Thompson Show and at Skip Lacombe, hashtag what I learned today. So John Kerry tweeted a picture of him meeting with some movie studio execs in Hollywood. And he put, great convo with studio execs in L.A. Good to hear their perspectives and ideas of how to counter Daesh narrative. Daesh are the people behind ISIS, right? Is that the other name for the ISIS?
Yeah, I believe that they're generally now calling Daesh the people that are making up ISIS.
Okay, so that's John Kerry's tweet. What does this mean? Why would he be meeting with them? Again, for studio execs to hear their perspectives and ideas on how to counter their narrative.
Now, is he referring to the narrative of the videos that ISIS is putting out or the general... ideas that they're putting out via social media and other forms of disseminating their message?
Okay, let's break it down. What ideas are he trying? Is he trying to counter? You're right, Skip. Is it the ideas of terrorism and the stuff they say? The videos themselves? Is it people's reactions that automatically all Muslims are bad?
Are they trying to recraft the narrative of what Islam
actually means?
What ISIS is trying to portray it as?
Okay, that's all really disturbing, because why would a Secretary of State pursue some how to change the narrative or whatever at all? That's not your job. Your job is not a propaganda secretary, because that's what you're talking about here. Whether it's good propaganda, accurate propaganda, or wrong, real, right, it's still propaganda. You're still spinning something, trying to control the opinions and attitudes of American citizens. And that's not your job.
Furthermore, who is this propaganda they're working on meant to be used against? Is it meant to be used against Americans or meant to be used in the Middle East to go ahead and reshape the narrative there?
Or around the rest of the world.
To whom is this new narrative you're trying to create meant to be spun to?
And then finally, what forms would this new narrative take? He met with studio execs, so was that so they could give him ideas on stuff that the government would produce or do? So did they sit there and they said, okay, John, here's what you got to do. You got to create little videos and some sort of campaign and a message. You put up a website that says this, 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 and this. Or did they say, tell you what, John, we'll go ahead and produce movies for you and do this, 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 and this. Was John putting pressure on them to change things in movies or to create? Will he pay them for their propaganda? What does this mean?
It doesn't make any sense.
This is one of the strangest stories I have seen in forever.
Wait a second. Did you ever see the movie Argo?
I have seen Argo.
Maybe this is something like that, where they're going to be producing a film or fake producing a film to go ahead and be used as some sort of a...
rescue operation?
I mean, I don't know. This is all above my pay grade, but I mean, I saw the movie Argo. This could have something to do with like a fake movie. We already have kind of a fake Secretary of State.
Have you ever seen the movie Wag the Dog?
I have. Tremendous.
Okay,
movie.
It could be more like that. They're going to create a campaign for him that is not true at all. I speculate they've already created campaigns for him. That's what this seems more like. But what are your thoughts on this?
Well, and if that's the case, if it is more of a Wag the Dog type situation, why would he be so public in providing this information of, hey, I'm meeting with studio executives on ways to change your thoughts?
That's what's so.
Or are they just so
this?
Brash with it these days that it doesn't matter? They are able to be completely open, and that's the case of the transparent administration. Hey, we're screwing you. We're going to go ahead and do mind control with all of you guys.
No, John Kerry tweeted a picture of him meeting with studio execs. Bring that back up again and put it on the screen. Take a look at this. What did he do, Skip? He tweeted a picture. Why? He's meeting with the celebs, man. It's like you and I would tweet out a picture hanging with some celebrity or somebody else would do because, hey, it's cool. I get to hang with this person. He tweeted out a pic that he got to hang out with these cool Hollywood folk. I really think that's what he was doing there.
He was just trying to get likes and favorites and a retweet.
Right, exactly.
Twitter.
But he has to look like he's working. So it's like, hey, perspective and ideas on how to deal with ISIS, which, you know, who could fault him for that? But then when you really break it down, what does that mean?
And Doc, you're much more of a student of the actual purposes and responsibilities of Secretary of State. But shouldn't the majority of his work be conducted outside of the United States of America? I mean, it's really in the same type of way that embassy heads are meant to be the figurehead and to speak for the president. That's essentially a large portion of the responsibilities of Secretary of State is to be the spokesperson for the United States while the president is doing other things, to help craft the message, to meet with foreign dignitaries, not people in Hollywood, stateside.
Often,
even if you went to Bollywood, it would make more sense. Meeting with Bollywood executives.
Often, I view Hollywood as just a foreign, like a third world country or something to me. I don't get it. I don't understand it. It's just some foreign place. So maybe he does, too. Maybe he looks at it like that and like, well, I've got to go meet with them, right? I'm a Secretary of State, John Kerry. Or perhaps, maybe John doesn't want to let the cat out of the bag. Maybe there's something else going on.
Like what? What do you mean?
A remake of Seabiscuit.
Oh,
maybe they're petitioning
wow.
him to star in Seabiscuit.
Wouldn't that be fantastic?
Just saying, it's a possibility. Is there a movie coming up about Secretariat? That'd make a good
know.
Movie, too. Something
sure.
like that.
Maybe. Oh, you know what? Everything old is new again. Mr. Ed.
Maybe it's a reboot of Mr. Ed. Could be any number of opportunities they're working with John Kerry on.
Dude, they could throw Sarah Jessica Parker in, have a nice little rom-com.
See, that's what I'm thinking there. You got a whole
okay.
thing going there. The two of them may be in the running for the same role.
The running. I see what you
doing. I see what I did with the
exactly.
running, the whole
that's
thing
funny.
Or whatever. Let's get a break in. And then I'm going to come back with your tweets. Why was John Kerry really meeting with these people in Hollywood? And what do you think is going to come of this? If he had his wish, are they trying to get Hollywood to create propaganda? Is it a campaign? Are they giving suggestions to the administration? What is their true purpose and what will this end up being? Your tweets coming up next on Pat and Stu. Confused when Antonin Scalia passed away because there was an official spokesperson from the U.S. Marshal Service who gave a comment on his passing. And I thought that was odd because, like, what is the Marshals? What do they have to do with this thing? Well, it turns out the U.S. Marshals actually do Secret Service detail, but for Supreme Court justices, which makes no sense to me. I mean, in modern times, I know they've primarily focused on prisoner transport. I mean, for 100-whatever years, the U.S. Marshals' official duties have changed many, many times. Back in the day, they were federal law enforcement, like in the Wild West and so on and so forth. And their jobs have changed over the years. I didn't realize that they did protection for Supreme Court justices.
Yeah, and it's a question that we had both had when this came up, too, because the first comments that came out after Antonin Scalia died was that it was from a U.S. Marshals spokesperson. We were saying, well, why would that be? I said, well, I guess there must be something in terms of they must protect. So I did some research on it. Did they look up? And it does turn out that the U.S. Marshals do provide security services for the Supreme Court justices.
That makes no sense. Why in the world do we have the U.S. Marshals doing Secret Service type detail for the Supreme Court instead of the Secret Service doing it? You already have people that are experts, supposedly, at security, at personal security. Why wouldn't you have one agency that just does all of that? So you got Secret Service that says, okay, we do protection detail for the president, members of the cabinet, and leadership in the House, especially if they are in line for secession to the presidency, and also some presidential candidates. It varies when they get them. If you have certain threats or whatever, then you get it. They do that and counterfeiting. Then you have the U.S. Marshals that do transporting of federal prisoners and protection for Supreme Court justices.
Is it possible that people within the U.S. Marshal's office are trained in some sort of different way? Like, for instance, and hear me out on this, maybe the U.S. Marshals have the ability to use, like, the defibrillator on Ginsburg or something to keep her alive.
They have special training?
I don't know if that's specifically it, but there has to be something specific that the U.S. Marshals do. Otherwise, why would they provide specific security for that when the Secret Service is, I mean, the nation's experts in keeping people safe?
I'm sure somewhere along the line, likely, one of these brilliant people in D.C., brought up this question as well. Hey, how come we don't have one security detail? They're really good at this, you know, the perfect or the experts at it. And then we'll have them provide security for anybody at that level. Likely some smart person, because we've got so many in D.C., brought this up.
Brilliant people.
And when they brought it to the Supreme Court justices, they said, hey, you know, Ruth, and hey, John, and hey, Antonin, how about Secret Service takes care of you now, protecting you now? And they were like, ooh, no, no, we don't want Secret Service. No, 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 no. Based on that White House fence jumper and that. No, no, no.
Or the trip to Columbia, or the trip to any a number of the other places,
yeah, no,
or the cocaine scandals, or the drinking and driving scandals.
Or maybe somebody went to the Secret Service and said, you know, we think we're just going to have you do Secret Service, you know, security detail for others as well, like the Supreme Court. And they're like, well, do they go to Columbia ever? Anything like that? No, no, they're pretty much right there. They travel to their home.
Antonin goes back to a ranch in Texas regularly, though.
Are there a lot of whores there?
No.
No? Underage whores and drugs?
There's quail hunting.
Yeah. No, no. I don't think we want to take care of them. We want people who travel a lot to third world countries that have a lot of hookers and drugs. That's who we're interested in protecting right there.
We do still have the contract on the Prime Minister of Thailand, right?
Let me ask you this. Could we start protecting, like, maybe an Elliot Spitzer or somebody like that? We're interested in that. That'd be cool for us.
When does Epstein get out of prison, by the way? Because, I mean, he's going to need somebody. He's going to need somebody looking after him.
We'll take care of that. That's the type of person we're interested in. This makes no sense to me. Back in the day, George W. Bush, when he grew the federal government massively by creating an entire newly new department, the Department of Homeland Security, wasn't that just the Department of Defense? When he did this, he also realigned them, the law enforcement agencies. So some now in the Department of Homeland Security, they used to be under the Defense Department, and now we have two defense departments. Really, that's what it is. Why in the world do we not have the Department of Homeland Security as part of the Department of Defense?
Doc,
aren't they both interested in defense?
Doc, no, the Department of Homeland Security is going to be the umbrella organization over all of these to make sure that information gets properly disseminated. That way, you know, we'll avoid any further terrorist attacks, that nobody will ever be able to successfully get off any sort of an attack on our soil.
You bring up a great point. That was one of their arguments. See, as part of this, because one of the failures prior to 9/11 is these agencies didn't communicate, so now they'll communicate. Guess what? They're not communicating. This was nonsense. Why, as part of the alignment, didn't we say, why do we have U.S. Marshals and ATF and the FBI and all of these different, we've got Capitol Police, we've got all of these. This is nonsense. You need a Department of Defense, and under that, you put the CIA and the FBI. This one, intelligence gathering around the globe. This one investigates and handles all things federal police force-esque. You protect justices, whatever. You can have a division of that that acts as Secret Service, fine. You can have them taking care of alcohol, tobacco, and firearms. Why are those separate from other FBI investigations?
Exactly.
You've got ICE and immigration. Just put them all under one blanket agency with different little departments. You focus on this, you focus on that.
You know, this isn't a perfect example, too, of all these agencies have been created over the years, too, that they had. They created a need for this, so they're like, okay, we'll create a department for this. And like we've seen with anything else ever created by government, once it's there for good. I think that's one of the issues, too, that all these different organizations have their own piece of the pie they've cut out, that things they're in charge of, and now that that's been part of the status quo, you're never going to see it change.
Well, and that's why you also get them playing this jurisdiction game. Well, we've got jurisdiction and all this stuff
You're
or whatever.
Exactly right.
You would get rid of that, at least in part, if you had one agency that said, you're handling this, 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 and this, because you'd all have that FBI on your badge or whatever it is. It's just, okay, we're going to handle it. It'd be like, you know, homicide is part of a big police force versus, you know, people who handle other things, traffic laws or whatever. You're going to do this, you're going to do this, and that's just how it is.
Okay, so we see all these different agencies doing all these different things. Doc, let me ask you, what government agency is in charge of arresting people who don't pay their federal student loans?
I didn't even know they arrested you for not paying your federal student loans. I don't know, the student loan police? I don't know, I'm sure it's a whole different agency.
Apparently, in addition to transporting criminals and protecting Supreme Court justices, the U.S. Marshals have now also taken under the act of arresting people who are in default on their student loans. Doc Thompson, your thoughts.
Okay, hold on a second. While I agree, if you are in constant default for a long period of time on your loans, they got to take care of it somehow. I don't know, maybe it is arresting you somehow, garnish your wages, do what you have to do. I'm not excusing away people who are not paying back their loans from the government. Absolutely not. However,
is this the best use of their time and resources? What the hell?
Are these the criminals you should be prioritizing? They're arguing every day that illegals, who we do not know who they are and what crimes they've committed, in fact, many of them have committed some pretty heinous crimes, we shouldn't even look at them. You shouldn't arrest them. You should just let them stay. In fact, make them legal, they're saying. But the guy who's not paying his student loan, that's an American citizen, you go after that guy. You got to arrest him.
Yeah, one of the stories that has come out recently is a man named Paul Aker, too, who owes $15,000 on a student loan that goes back to 1987. 1987, that is 29 years ago, a $1,500 student loan, and he was arrested, forced to go down to the U.S. Marshal's office and sign up for a repayment plan for his loans. Doc Thompson, I see you.
I had a question over here.
Question?
Doc Thompson, The Blaze. Doc Thompson, I had a question over here. Yeah. My question is, what about all the companies that got loans from the government under the Obama administration and others who didn't pay him back? How about that?
Well, that's not
like Solyndra and all the other solar and green companies.
$1,500, though. Dude, this guy owed $1,500.
These people owed millions, some of them tens of millions of dollars, and we're not arresting them?
No.
Wow. Once again, strain at the gnat, swallow the camel. No priorities when it comes to other criminals in America. Just go ahead and forgive them away. And then other people with similar cases where you're not paying half your money, that it's far more money. They not only get to keep it, they actually stay friends with the administration. Tax cheat Tim Geithner's got a special deal now with the government. Did you see that one?
Mm-hmm.
Wow.
Yeah, the U.S. Marshal's Office says this is not the first arrest. This is not going to be the last arrest. There's anywhere between 1,200 and 1,500 active arrest warrants out for people who have not paid their loans.
Where's the ones for the people who used to run Solyndra? That's who he needs to be going after.
Maybe
stop going
it's
after
in
people
there, you know?
Eventually go after him, but go after the millions for people like Solyndra. And while you're at it, go after Obama for giving him that money with no oversight. Go arrest those knuckleheads. Oh, this drives me up the wall. All right. It's a good time for a break. Get a break in here. Get your thoughts coming up. Pat and Stu. So it's Doc and Skip in for Pat and Stu today, and I was all set to explain an interesting story that's coming up. And right as I was about ready to speak, I was reminded something one of the crew said right during the break, and that is apparently a statistic is out that 10% of all Americans believe that Judge Judy is on the Supreme Court.
No way.
That seems low, doesn't it?
That can't be true.
No,
it's too low. 10%?
10%.
One out of every 10 Americans believes that Judge Judy Schindler,
whatever,
is part of the Supreme Court.
Right.
Yep. By the way, she's like the top paid TV personality in the world.
Period. Absolutely.
She makes
bar
like
none.
$47 million
for that
a year.
Nonsense. Yeah.
Annually.
You'd think she'd be a little bit more affable, right? Because she is so nasty. You'd think she'd be like, I got $47 million. What up?
I love the character she plays, though. I absolutely love it.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a character.
No.
I mean, she's even been hopeful out front with the fact that it's a character.
I think 10% is low. I'm shocked it's not 40% of people think she's on the Supreme Court. Why wouldn't you believe it? These people are knuckleheads out there. But
I got to do my own research on this.
Okay, if that number is true, that means look around. Count the people in your office, the people in your home. You got 10 friends? Some of them. If you don't believe she is, then one of your other nine friends.
Out there, if you're able to do a little bit of market research for me, ask 10 people in your office, 10 people you see on the street today, if Judge Judy is part of the Supreme Court. If you guys are able to find that and find some of those statistics, please tweet at us. It's at Doc Thompson Show, at Skip Lacombe. I have to know if this is true. I don't believe it.
I have more faith in
America.
How would they position it to their friends and family? You can't just say, is Judge Judy on the Supreme Court? It's got to be a way it's crafted so they don't know you're going for something. Just say, how would you survey that? Would you just say, is Judge Judy on the Supreme Court?
I think that's the only way you can.
Or do you do Judge Judy, is she on the Supreme Court, the appellate court, just a television court? Would it be something like that?
See, I don't even know if you could go and give the option of just a television court, because that might skew the... I think you have to just straight up ask, is Judge Judy. In fact, you may even want to throw the last name in there.
Yeah, no, I think you just Judge
Judy. Actually, just Judge Judy,
yeah. Judge Judy, what is her background? What court does she sit on? Right? I know that's a little trickery, but that doesn't give it away then. What court does Judge Judy preside on?
Yeah, you can maybe even do a multiple choice of the Supreme Court, an appellate court, some other court.
Yeah. But start with just asking, before you give multiple, on which court does Judge Judy sit? Which bench does she sit? What court does she preside over? Something like that. I mean, it's a little tricky because it's not really a court. It's a television court. But I think that would at least, you'll know right off. If they're like, is it the Supreme Court? You'll know. But then let us know if you got how many people out of how many people. And just tweet at us, at Doc Thompson Show or at Skip Lacombe. I mean, in the next couple days. You don't have to do it right this second. I'm curious moving forward about this. Man. Well, then you got Judge Joe Brown. Is he appellate court?
No,
is it Judge...
Court. Then Judge Reinhold, too.
Judge Reinhold.
Judge. You got Judge Reinhold.
Judge Reinhold. He was Chief Justice, right?
Chief Justice Judge
Reinhold. Course, wow, yeah. That's hilarious or whatever. All right, back to the story that I intended to share before I saw that nutty little statistic. We talked about immigration a little bit earlier and laid out the entire way immigration should work in America if you want to fix the problems that we have and moving forward, how we handle all of those things, clean it up a little bit. And, of course, we have to enforce our laws. But new information says that President Obama is actively seeking for places to send the immigrants, the illegal immigrants, specifically some of the children that came up from Central America over the last couple of years, and he wants to house them, amongst other places, government-owned properties, even military bases. Skip Lacombe, your thoughts.
I think this is dangerous. Again, I'm concerned about that we're trying so hard and putting so much effort and research into where to put these people who are dangerous.
He said not only military bases, but also other federal buildings and federal facilities. So it could be your federal courthouses, anything. Do these facilities have to be empty for him to house them there?
I don't know.
That's a huge question.
This is all interesting. And again, who's paying for all of this?
We are.
But why?
What do you mean? Because we have to take care of the illegals.
Why? But they're here illegally. Again, this goes back to the whole fact that we no longer enforce our immigration system. We see story time and time again of these people committing murders, being dangerous, rapes, DWIs. People are dying because of the illegal immigration process.
Okay, I probably shouldn't do this. I'm going to help Obama out here a little bit. I'm going to help him out just a little. I shouldn't do this, but all right, what the heck, I'll throw it out there. You know I'm a consistent, honest person, right? I mean, so
Yeah. If
he really wants to spin it to people, and you say, I'm going to house these people on military bases, federal buildings, federal properties, installations, stuff like this, what you do is have them offering, like, free cleaning services.
Free cleaning services.
Yeah, the illegals, you say, okay, yeah, they're at the federal building, sure, but they're going to clean up your cubicle for you when you go home at night, like this.
They're providing something.
Providing services, something like this. Maybe making cultural food from where they're from, something like this, you know, for lunch. Doing the basic services that Americans won't do, you know.
I mean, there's also, most of these federal buildings, too, have pretty expansive grounds as well.
That's right.
You go
and
take care of, like, the hedges, mowing the lawn.
That's how you spin
operate those, like, those leaf blowers.
That's how you market. That's how you spin it to them. Mm-hmm. Yep.
At least they're doing some work at least, paying off their debt to society.
That's it. And, of course, if he does that, then you get the unions complaining, then we're right back into it. So it still works for us.
Exactly.
Still works for us. This is so ridiculous. I have no problem with you, an individual, saying, I'm going to help my fellow man. In fact, you're supposed to do that. But you should help people that need help. The illegals need help in foreign countries. They need the help, sure. We cannot help them properly being here in America. Without our federal government going in and kicking the ass of dictators that run their companies or countries and then reset up a new system, which has not worked traditionally very well for us when we try to do that, we cannot save them. I'm sorry. We can, however, welcome them here when they come here legally. And we've been incredibly generous. About 1 million people every year for decades now come here legally. Legally. We allowed that many people. We have said we will give up our birthright, our economic stature, our monies for you, simply because you say you want to join our ranks. We're not trying to keep you out. We're going to give it up. In fact, if there are 320 million people here, as there are now, Americans, versus $200 million, as there was years ago. That means your part, your ownership in America, your ownership in the wealth of America, the stuff we own jointly, public lands, has been diminished. And yet, in spite of that, we say, sure, come here, a million of you legally a year. As long as you're a good person and you want to join America, you want to join the melting pot, bringing your cultural identity to us and helping shape us, but accepting that we have certain rules and laws. We say, come and join us.
Well, and you even talk about, too, the whole concept and idea of spreading democracy around the world hasn't worked very often in most places. Name a couple times it has worked. I mean, aside from a scenario which you could argue something like a South Korea or something that was under the face of communism up north, they still wanted to go ahead and keep
a capitalistic society.
No, there is a difference, too. I'm saying that are there really any incidences of us going in, kicking the ass of a dictator, wiping out their system, and establishing a perfect democracy?
No, there have been bits and pieces, and every situation is different. But if you look at a South Korea, it was different there because the people of South Korea wanted democracy. They knew what this was, and they helped fight for it. That was it. And the dividing line, 38th parallel, and the North was backed by China and others. We understand how that works. When it comes to something like Japan, they attacked us. We took over after the war and then helped them reestablish. So the people were kind of forced to go along. But it wasn't the same situation as going into an Iraq and saying, we're going to go ahead and depose their dictator and then try to set this thing up. Whether they wanted it or not, it's a very different scenario. They being people in other countries around the world, have to passionately want this.
They have to fight for it.
Right, and fight for it. And I don't mean like a handful of rebels. You need most people that are at least open to the idea and saying, we are willing to do what it takes. Will you just help us do this? Like America was when we went to France and said, hey, you know, we want to do this on our own. We're here fighting for this. We're putting it together. We've already told England we are done here, but we could use a couple of bucks and maybe some ships off the shore.
Then why don't these people who are coming to America from El Salvador and Honduras, Guatemala, all these Central American countries too, all these people are obviously seeking, even if you want to go ahead and call from the liberal progressive a better way of life, which honestly I believe is true of a lot of the people who come here. They do want a better life for themselves and their families, better opportunity to make money, and they know that it's possible in America. Why don't they fight for a more American-like system within their own countries?
Okay.
And if they do that, build up a bit of a groundswell, hey, maybe America will come to your aid to help make that a case. But like you said, those people have to want it.
That's a great point. The only problem, and thing I will say, it is very difficult for them to do that. Everything is stacked against them when they say, we're going to go ahead and fight for this.
I don't deny
it. To the point that, like, look at North Korea. They can't even get together and go, all right, this is bad, right? You see everything going on. North Korea is so lost, the citizens do not even know that anything exists outside of North Korea. We know very little about what exists in North Korea. Most of what we know comes from people who have escaped from North Korea. And they tell us of the system, and it is the worst that you could imagine, period. It is the worst scenarios you can imagine in all of America or all of human history. It really is that bad. There are others that challenge it to be just as bad, but it is simply the worst. Now, they don't know anything exists. As bad as it is, they do not know. In fact, many of the people that have escaped from North Korea would say things like, I thought this was the best. That's what they tell us, that it was even worse outside of here. So why am I leaving? It's going to be even worse.
But
I better stay here where it's good.
If that's their benchmark for high, then I truly would like to speak to one of these people who grew up in a system like that, too, and was convinced that North Korea and living in a prison camp was the best it gets anywhere in the world. What were some of their notions of what things would have been like in other countries?
And it's not,
they're fed propaganda about what America's like in evil.
They can't even think that way, Skip. I mean, I just finished another book. I've read several of them of people who have escaped from North Korea, and it's the same scenario. They are brainwashed that dear leader is a god. Imagine for a moment if you suddenly found out that everything you had ever believed about your deity, Jesus, if you're a Christian, Muhammad, or if you're Muslim, if you, or Allah, I guess it would be, if you are suddenly, if you found out that that was all a complete lie without question, everything, that's what it's like for these people. They can't even fathom that it wouldn't be the truth. It is, dear leader, is their deity. It's a religion. They have pictures they bow and worship to. You must keep one in your home in good condition or you will be arrested. It's open fist or open hand, or the closed, clenched fist or open hand is what they get you with. Hey, open hand, sure, dear leader is here for you. Now, you're not getting a lot, but if you don't act on it, then you get the clenched fist. That's how they treat it. They can't even imagine, Skip. It's not even like they're calculated and saying, okay, this is really bad around here, but the rest of the world is worse. I wonder what that's like. It just stops right there. It's just the rest of the world is worse. That's it. So if that's your, if that's the system you're living in, you can't even go to somebody else. First of all, you don't even question it. But if you did, absolutely say, what's going on? There's got to be something different. And I go to you and I go, Skip, man, here's what I'm thinking. Maybe this guy's Looney Tunes. Maybe this guy's crazy. You're going to, how dare you? It would be like me going, Skip, that Jesus is all wrong. I don't like him. And start, you're going to, Doc, I'm really uncomfortable by this. Don't talk about that.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
And then you're also worried they're going to come and arrest you. They don't even know. Now, it's not as bad in places like Guatemala, but it's still bad. They have a little more information in that. But you've got to garner garner all the support from everybody else you know, get them to actually go and try to overthrow the government. If you're looking at some place like Mexico, which is relatively established and powerful by comparison to places like Guatemala, the feds are all corrupt. The federales all bought and paid for. You know that.
Yeah.
So it's not easy to break through, but we also cannot do that for you. We just can't, unless America says we are prepared to systematically, one by one, go into countries, kick all their butts, and set up a government. Is that what our job is?
No.
It's better
I've said
to
for a long time, we don't want to become the world's the international police, you know?
I think it's better if we say, this is who we are. And let's be honest, we have not been good at marketing ourselves. We've done a lot of things wrong with different presidents. We don't have a consistent foreign policy. We need to say, this is who we are. Admit to mistakes we've made and say, moving forward, we are going to be that shiny city on a hill. We're going to be the beacon. We are going to be the Statue of Liberty. Come here. We welcome you if you are the right person, if you are the right type of person. You can't come here just because you want cash, you just want a better way of life or whatever. It has to be that you get it about freedom. You get the personal freedom angle and you're willing to work for it. You come here legally and we will make it as easy as possible for you to immigrate legally. But respect our country and we welcome you. That to me has to be what it is.
Well, we have to figure out a way to better screen these people as well. That's a huge problem, too, that they just have not been able to accomplish. Even the many of the people who have come through that system, too, and committed terrorist attacks here, like the Tsarnaevs, they went through that process. They fell through the cracks.
Right. I mean, I don't know how you definitively tell what's in a person's heart.
And you never will. I mean, it's the same thing with guns. Is you're never going to.
But can you
be
get better at it, though?
I don't know. Probably. I'm sure you can always get better at things. And I think that there definitely needs to be an improvement with there.
Because I wouldn't want it to be a situation where, like, Skip and I are the immigration agents. And we're there like, okay, so it says here in your application that you're from here. And you ask them some questions. And you're like, I don't know if they really get it or not.
No, you're
never
going to get anything.
Like,
but I mean, when I take a look, and of course, we don't know all the specifics about exactly what they're doing, the entire process of every single person that comes through here. But we do have story after story after story about government ineptitude, waste, corruption, and graft that tells me that with 100% confidence that they're not doing it the right way. That even if it is there and the process is in place, even if that's a flawed process, they're still not even using that.
I think I know what the answer to that is.
What's that?
Know what the what the standard has to be in order to check, to screen these people, the screening process. And you know what it is? What we used to do. Make it difficult. Not expensive, but difficult. If you're willing to work for it, doesn't that mean you're going to get it? If you can do it quickly, okay, that's nice. Some people would be people who get it. But the people that are passionate about becoming Americans, like our friend Jonathan from Ireland, right? Glenn's had him on, we've talked to him or whatever. If you're passionate about it, you're going to do the work. You're going to say, I'm going to learn the language, I'm going to do whatever because I want to join that melting pot. If it's just a quick, give me money so I can go there and work, you're not going to go through all those steps. Sorry. Time to tell you about a great company called Go. This is something I'm fascinated by because I love the idea of solar energy. Solar energy is now affordable thanks to Go. And if you want to increase the value of your home and save some money at the same time, Go can help you. Installed for $0 out of pocket. Boy, that's huge. You will save 20 to 30% on what you're currently paying to power your home. Over 60,000 satisfied customers, and they have the best warranty in the industry. So think Go. They are one of the biggest residential solar companies in America with over 60 local offices. So you never have to go and worry about if there's going to be proper customer service or maintenance, because it's going to be right there in your area. Find out if Go is available in your area at GoSolarWithTheBlaze.com. Power your home affordably with GoSolarWithTheBlaze.com. Doc Thompson along with Skip McComb in for Pat and Stu today. If you want to find out more about us, just go to theblaze.com/doc. That's theblaze.com/doc. You can listen to our morning radio program on demand anytime. Again, theblaze.com/doc. Talking about immigration, one of my frustrations is this idea that all illegals are good people, or the majority of them are good people. One of the statistics I always see is where they say, listen, these immigrants, and they, of course, throw all immigrants in there, not just illegals, they say they commit fewer crimes than even American citizens, which is nonsense, because I don't care if illegals commit virtually no crimes. If it's one per million, that would be a crime that would not have been committed if they were not in America. The percentage doesn't matter to me. You can eliminate all of those crimes, however many it is, whatever percentage it is, they would not exist if those illegals were not in America.
And we hear all the time people and liberals talking about if we could save just one life, if we could just prevent one. The president, everything he said about gun control, while acknowledging the fact that none of the things that he wants to put in would have saved a single life, if we could just save one going forward, isn't it worth it? You know a way we can go ahead and save some lives? By cutting down on the illegal immigrants entering America, because we have story after story about them doing horrible crimes. Did you hear about the one out of Massachusetts recently?
I only vaguely. You're going to have to fill me in on this. I didn't.
An execution-style killing happened recently of a 19-year-old by two unaccompanied children who have come into the United States within the past couple of years. This happened in Massachusetts. It was these two kids. It was Christian Nunez Flores and Jose Vaquez Ardon. Now, these two guys shot a 19-year-old in the back of the head, execution style. Both are here illegally. Their parents are back in El Salvador, unknown about Jose's parents. But yeah, two unaccompanied children came here for a better way of life, part of the tens of thousands of illegal immigrants, of these unaccompanied children who have come here from El Salvador, Guatemala, Honduras, all these other Central American nations, and are committing crimes. Now, if we could have saved this guy's life, isn't it worth it? What about the story out of San Francisco of Kate Steinle, who was gunned down on the pier by an illegal immigrant? We've even got these organizations out there, too, who document these
like the
cases.
Remembrance Project?
The Remembrance Project. Awesome, awesome organization that actually goes through each time these happens and reports specifically on them. Now, are you going to see the parents of this guy that was gunned down invited to the next State of the Union address? No,
wow.
Of course not, because it doesn't fit the agenda. Because they have no answer to the fact that, yeah, some of the people that are coming in here who are claiming to seek a better way of life and just want to participate in the melting pot are killing people.
You know, and Skip, and two, as part of these let's make illegals legal process, they said, well, we've got to help people. They've even set up watering stations in the desert. All of these things to help illegals because we've got to save them. And then they say, listen, you know, illegals are also victimized quite often because they feel like they can't go to the police. They're, you know, victims of crimes. You could solve all of that. People dying in the desert, you don't need watering stations if they weren't coming here. If they knew America was closed for illegals, they wouldn't come here. You wouldn't have people dying in the desert. You wouldn't have coyotes being paid and taking advantage. Coyotes, people who smuggle illegals into the country.
Not like Wile E. Coyote.
No.
Very different coyote.
You wouldn't have them smuggling people and taking advantage of them. You wouldn't have people taking advantage of illegals that are here, because it's wrong. You got a lot of people that do take advantage of illegals. They're cleaning houses for a buck and a half a day or something like this, and American citizens are screwing them. You wouldn't have any of that. You wouldn't have these people dying. What about the cost of life there to other illegals that you're supposedly trying to help?
Now, I know this sounds extreme and harsh, but literally, if we got sick about securing our border, build the 30-foot Donald Trump fence, we'll put a moat in there with alligators, put landmines out there, I mean, have people ready for drones and shooting people that come across the border illegally, I guarantee you people are going to stop trying to come across the border. Now, that sounds harsh. I don't want to see a bunch of kids get their limbs blown off trying to cross the country illegally. But if you actually did take border security seriously, we could stop them from coming here illegally.
Think about the other cost of illegals when it comes to people like this. Okay, that's horrible. The guy got killed. But it doesn't stop with his death. Yes, he had the ultimate infringement of his personal freedoms. He was killed by somebody else. That is the ultimate infringement. But what about everybody else? His family members that survived. There's no bringing him back. And you can never truly make whole family members who've lost a loved one if there was some, you know, nefarious activity that led to their death. But we seek in our justice system to do as good a job as we can to make family members in this situation whole. That's the reason punishment is to punish the criminal. Other actions like lawsuits or whatever are to do your best to try to at least close the gap of their suffering or their loss. And we do that with fines and whatever else. Now, again, it doesn't come anywhere near it, but at least you can mitigate it a little bit. When it comes to illegals, you can get no justice because often they flee. We don't know who they really are. Sometimes they sneak out of the country before you can punish them. You've got people who offer them a sanctuary. And even if you do know who they are and they do get tried and they do get convicted, the family member goes, okay, now I'm going to sue you. You're not going to be able to sue him for what?
What will you get from him?
What are you going to get out of him?
No.
You cannot even get enough to bury the loved one. And that's part of the other problem. We have no control over who these people are. We do not know who they are. We don't know if we're going to be able to keep them here once they... It's all wrong. And now you've got another family member or another person suffered, and all of his family members will continue to suffer because of his death.
No, it's horrible. And then there's stories like this every single week in America. There's a story similar to this of a DWI, somebody's lives who is irreparably changed by an illegal immigrant.
When I worked in Richmond, Virginia, which I love Virginia, there was a case of some nuns that were hit by a drunk driver and killed. Do you remember that story? The nuns that were killed by an illegal. There was another gentleman who was hit by an illegal and killed, who was drunk, by the way, and had been in the country and DUIs and everything else for quite a while. And I got to know his family just a little bit, including his brother. And he was on the air with me several times and talked about this. And he was very careful not to politicize this. For him, this was not about politics and left and right and Republicans and Democrats, but these people know that there is a problem. It shouldn't be politicized. It doesn't have to be. There is right and there is wrong with this. We have a border and border security for a reason. Unless you are somebody who says, open up all borders, let people come and go freely, then you must agree we must protect our border. That's it.
There is no middle ground. We'll kind of protect our border.
Why would you kind of protect it? Then don't protect it at all. What's the point? Unless you're going to do it right, why do it? It's like saying I'm going to kind of protect my home. Some people could come in and steal from me. I mean, it's either do it or don't.
Well, and even at the end of the day, too, with two 17-year-olds that came in and killed this guy, too, they're in jail without bail right now, too. They're getting food. They're getting protection. They're getting a roof over their heads, too, even if they're in the prison system. So, I mean, that's probably better even than their life of fleeing Guatemala. So all you got to do is come over here, kill somebody, and we'll take care of you in our prison system for the rest of your life.
Listen to this statistic, by the way. In Cologne, Germany, the Daily Star is reporting that Muslim crime suspects, this is in Germany, they outrank German suspects 70-3. In other words, 96% of crime suspects in Cologne are refugees.
Wow, that's very racist of you. I can't believe it.
How is it racist?
Dude, that's racist. What do you mean pointing out specifically they're all Muslims?
That's not
I can't believe you would just flippantly throw racism in here.
By the way,
it's misogynistic, too. I don't know why, but it's highly misogynistic.
I think this statistic could be skewed a little bit to show or to make the argument that it's Muslims. That's a problem in Germany. Yes, that is a bit of the problem. But the problem isn't just Muslims versus Christians versus other religions. It has to do with immigrants, too. Illegals.
The refugees, they're calling
them now. Or refugees, exactly, the way they're spinning this or whatever. These are people who did not say, listen, for years I'm going to struggle to do the right things to immigrate to another country, like we talked about in America. Instead, it's just, let's send these people someplace else, let's open it all up, and we don't know who they are, and that's part of the difference. You must vet these people. They are not vetted if they're refugees. There are ways you can help them without saying, come on in here. Now, part of it does have to do with their Muslim faith. Not that Islam has completely failed. There are plenty of good. Skip and I have a very good friend who produces our show in New York every morning who happens to be Muslim. And he has somebody that I trust implicitly. However, these people have a flawed view of the world because it comes with a chip on their shoulder. It's not just that they're Muslim. It's a chip on their shoulder that the rest of the world hates them because of their faith. And the proof they have, some of it's accurate, most of it's not. They look around and see all the bombs falling. They look around and see us invading countries and siding with Israel. Of course, you know the truth about that. You know the reasons behind all of that. But that has been used as propaganda to get them to hate us, to get them to hate the West in general.
When you talk
then
propaganda,
as refugees, they go into places like Germany, and they're like, I could do whatever the hell I want because they want to punish people.
We talk propaganda, too. It doesn't take very slick propaganda in those instances to go ahead and control their minds, too. As they are seeing bombs dropping all around, seeing friends and family members killed, yeah, you can easily find a scapegoat. And that scapegoat is very easily painted in the United States, obviously, a lot of time.
Right, and we know there's a lot more to it than that. We're just talking about the propaganda. One of the most fascinating things that I have learned over the years is the stories that have come out from the KGB when they opened up their files. This is stunning to me. It's genius, evil genius, but genius. That during the Cold War, all the way back to World War II, the KGB was seeding the Middle East with anti-American propaganda. The KGB was playing the long game on behalf of the Soviet Union to get us to fight against the Middle East and Islam, because every penny we spent over there and every moment we spent worrying about that was less time we could focus on them or money we had to spend to fight them. They were distracting us, getting us to fight other wars, so to speak. So this has been going on forever. You're talking generations who've been fed this propaganda. No wonder they hate us.
It's not all bad out of Cologne, though. There is some good
numbers. There's some good numbers?
You had to break it down, too. I mean, there have been a total of 1,075 criminal complaints filed relating to these Muslim influx. Mm-hmm. Of that, they've got 73 of the suspects. I've been identified. So they have a pretty good idea about 73 of them.
All right.
And as of now, they've actually gotten one of those guys, and he is in custody.
Wait, they've identified how many?
They've identified one of them. They've got one of them in custody.
How many were there?
There were 73 that they've identified, a grand total of 1,075 crimes. Of those, 467 involved crimes of sexual nature. And they figured out 73. Don't laugh at this. This is important, Doc. They've identified 73 of the people, and they actually have in custody one of them.
They know who 73 of them are, but they've arrested one. What are they waiting for?
They got one of them.
Are they waiting for the cops to show to film them Saturday night? And we'll get to it. Don't worry about
it. Well, they probably only have like one gun amongst all the police.
Oh, that's what it is.
They got to make sure.
Who's got the
one
gun today for the arrest? Is it Hans?
Oh, get the
Klaus
checkout sheet.
It.
Who has it today?
Klaus has it. Okay.
Goodness. Yeah,
we'll do the arrest tomorrow.
Then, okay. Yeah, I think so.
Get those tweets in at Doc Thompson Show and at Skip Lacombe. Some of them coming back. We're in for Pat and Stu today. Good idea or bad idea, I'm trying to put this into perspective beyond whether or not I would use this product, but there is a new product. It's a caffeine bracelet, so you can have your caffeine administered via a bracelet. And I'm trying to think, good idea or bad idea? Take a look at these.
I love the idea.
First of all, let's go fashionable. Are they fashionable for you, Skip, or you don't care?
They're not hideous. I mean, I don't think they're necessarily, look how cool that is. But it's fairly
offensive, troubling.
Offensive. It probably would blend in with most outfits,
think. They're unique enough that you could see them being kind of trendy and hip, you know.
See, yeah, that looks okay.
Know.
Yeah, that looks fine.
All right, so,
it's a little
whatever.
Different than the Livestrong bracelets people had for the longest time. Or
right, so they're
still wear.
At least did a unique design, so you know what they are. But it does administer a regular stream of caffeine for you. How do you pronounce it? Is it Jolie?
I believe it's Jolie caffeine
bracelet.
Which is cool, too. And as you can see, there's a little piece of white on there, too. And how it works is there's a detachable patch that you'll go ahead and put on there each time. Each of these patches lasts for about 4 hours and does deliver approximately the same amount of caffeine as a cup of coffee.
So, okay. So it's not, going crazy with this stuff. The problem is, in the morning, I'd have to have, like 17 of them up my arm.
And that was my question.
I would have the both arms done. I'd be putting them on my ankle. I'd have the necklace version.
That's the thing is I think most people who drink their coffee in the morning probably have more than just a single cup of coffee, I would think, right? It's usually three, four, a pod, or some people drink coffee all day long.
See, they had to, for these purposes, though, keep it relatively low. If they said, like, one patch lasted, it was like four cups of coffee, 1 hour or whatever, people would go, that's too much caffeine administered or whatever. But the idea behind the bracelet, do you like the idea? Not whether or not would you use it. Do you like the idea? Do you think it's a good idea?
I do. I love it. In fact, I think it's a smart idea, too. There's a lot of people, too, who are more health conscious about what they're putting in their body, too. And now, if they do just want that hit of caffeine in the morning but don't want to have to drink coffee, or a lot of people my age and millennials, some people can't drink coffee. I personally love coffee, and I still have it occasionally, but it usually doesn't agree with my stomach very well. So I can't have my morning coffee anymore. So oftentimes, I'll resort to an energy drink, which I know sounds just as bad, but it's the acid in the coffee that didn't.
Right, that's a little better for you, whatever. Well, then you got people, a whole generation grew up with having a lot of caffeine. Mm-hmm. I mean, several millennials, and it's all about the caffeine form. And look at the success of energy drinks. Maybe you don't want all those chemicals in your body, but you're wanting a little caffeine fix. I'm not saying it's right. I'm just saying what they're thinking.
Well, and that's the thing is I've actually looked in the past, too, to alternatives to that because I'm not able to drink coffee anymore. And for a while, I was buying from a health food store, kind of like an energy drink. It's mostly used for like a pre-performance workout for people who are actually doing like weightlifting and stuff. But it's basically just a powdered caffeine that has flavoring in it, too. And I was drinking that for a while, but it's fairly expensive. This device seems actually fairly reasonable. It's $30, I believe. For the actual bracelet itself, and it comes with a 30-day supply, $1 per bracelet. So that's $1 per cup of coffee. Think about how
many. Wait, what are the numbers again?
I believe it's $30, $29 for the actual bracelet itself. That includes 30 of these caffeine patches.
And then you can just buy the refills, or do you get the bracelet each time?
I'm assuming you could probably just buy the refills, which would probably be slightly less than the actual bracelet itself.
Although the bracelet isn't that expensive, so it's
I couldn't
not,
think so, yeah. So, I mean, you're thinking about a buck a day for your daily dose of caffeine, assuming you just use one bracelet. Think about how many people are going out there spending $4, $5, $6 every morning at Starbucks.
Yeah, that's true. Okay, so it's cost effective too. Apparently, we're not allowed. Had you come to me and laid this out 6 months ago and said, "All right, this is what we want to do," would you, assuming I had some money to invest, would you invest in this stock? I would have absolutely handed you money if I really thought you were going to do this. Here you go, take it. What's my return on the investment? Because this is going to be huge. I don't know if it'll be huge for 20 years, but at least for a year or two, this is going to be the thing. In fact, I'm not alone in believing this. They were asking for $15,000 on a crowdfunding website. Mm-hmm. They got $40,000. They got 257% more than they were asking for.
And they're going to end up getting a whole lot more, actually.
Oh, that's going to be huge.
In fact, after the show, they're about to get another $29.
That's just for the bracelet. That's not for the crowdfunding of it or whatever.
No. I think that's one of the options, too.
You do 20.
Yeah, I don't believe, in fact, correct me if I'm wrong, but I don't believe the product is actually available yet. It'll ship sometime in the summer, I believe. So right now, they're actually trying to get funding to make the actual production of the product.
Well, that's what I said, though. But I mean, people just donated basically through the crowdsourcing, though. They weren't buying the bracelet.
No, I think most of them would have actually gotten a bracelet with. I mean, there may be some options you can give them. Yeah, I mean, most of them.
Future.
I haven't actually seen their Indiegogo page, but oftentimes it lays out with, hey, donate to us the $29, you'll be first to get those. Or donate $1,000 and you get a distributor pack.
In fact, if they didn't do it that way, you have made a marketing boo-boo already.
There probably were options for, hey, give us $10 because you think it's a great idea and want to support us. And you could probably have donated money through other ways. But a majority of these funds raised, I'm assuming, will be in exchange for one of the finished products.
If they said, listen, pre-order now. We'll be officially ready for these for production, and you can have it in 6 months, and we already have your name. We'll keep it track. Give us your money, but know it's going to take 6 months, and you'll also be kind of hepping us out here a little bit. We'll throw in an extra one, whatever it is. They will make gobs and gobs of money. And as soon as they start seeing people wear these things, this thing will take off like crazy. It's a great idea.
Well, you're going to start seeing celebrities then wear it too with their jewelry. People are going to want to wear it just for that reason alone.
That's all it takes. You see LeBron James or somebody bust one of these things out, and it will go through the roof. That shape, look at this shape again. You will see these everywhere as soon as it takes off. That's my prediction.
That actually looks okay, actually.
Mm-hmm.
Looking at it on a person's team, when you just see the mock-up of it, you can't really tell, but That is not an ugly design by any means. I've seen a lot of products like this or things that people are going to want to try to with. Much of it is like a Fitbit 2 looks fairly sleek and uniform on the skin. So, yeah, I like that. I'm going to try to get one of those.
I have a couple of questions, though.
Yeah, shoot.
How do I get the cream and sugar with it? How do I do that? Is there a way? Is there another little patch for the cream and sugar?
It's not meant to be this is your daily coffee. It's just the caffeine.
But I want the coffee, too. Is there a way I could get the coffee with it, too? Not actually having to make it. I just put it on.
Why don't you just make some coffee in the morning? You don't want to have to make it?
Some sort of drip, something like that or whatever. Well, I have the American Pride Roasters coffee. That's the way to go. So I don't know if I could give that up in lieu of the caffeine. But other people that have not been exposed to the wonders that is American Pride Roasters, yeah, they're probably going to go for the caffeine. But great idea. Good for you. I love the entrepreneurial spirit. I love that people are coming up with stuff. On our morning radio program, Skip and I feature small businesses. We feature some larger businesses, too. Nonprofits. Anybody that has that entrepreneurial spirit that is part of the building of America. That's going to be one of the things that it takes to save America. You know, like all the nutty stuff going on right now? If you use the hashtag #BuildingAmerica on Twitter or go search it, you'll see some of the past people that we've had on. Sometimes we just open up the phone lines and let people plug their business. It hopefully inspires people, which it has, we know that. And it also gives these businesses some exposure. So that's something we do all the time. When I see this stuff, I love it. Absolutely love it. We're always looking for different ideas ourselves as well. And we're looking for and working on a couple of other interesting ideas that we'll probably be sharing with you in the coming months. But, yeah, this one is really neat. And I don't always get them right. There's a lot of ideas that I'm like, I don't know if that's going to be successful. And then, boom, it takes off.
In fact, you know, a lot of times when we feature these businesses, these entrepreneurs on Building America, they'll send us their product ahead of time and let us test them out and try it and so we can give a more informed. I'm going to go and look into getting Julie on the air for us, okay? Julie, wow. You're going to call for me soon, okay? Or you can just email me at skip@theblaze.com. Or if you do have a small business and would like to possibly be featured on our segment, just shoot me an email, skip@theblaze.com. Put in bold the headline, something like Building America, and we'll get you on.
Wow. Should they put in the headline something like free stuff? Is that what you want to put in there?
In fact, I tweeted my P.O. box about 7 tweets down. In fact, you can see it. Just take a look at my P.O. box. Send it away.
You're just trying to help them out. This is for them, right?
Just trolling at this point.
Okay, whatever. You should try that, though. I'm curious about the
bracelet. No, I really am, too, because that actually has been a problem of mine for a while, too. We wake up really early in the morning, too, for our radio program, mm-hmm. too. And I've never been a morning person. So if I could get a little bit of a boost just by wearing a sleek-looking bracelet. Pretty good.
There have been a couple of ideas on these crowdsourcing websites that are pretty cool. A lot of them are just crazy, stupid stuff or whatever. But do you remember the ones with the bees?
Beehives.
It's the actual hive. You've probably seen the traditional ones, the white boxes. You put them out there, they lift the screens out, and then they scrape the honey and the hive, the comb off or whatever. Well, somebody invented one, and this was one of the things I remember seeing on there that they got. It was over $1 million relatively quickly. So cool. They have if you ever see the hives, bees make the hexagon shape. They're all six-sided hexagons, and they all fit together. That's what the honeycomb is for, and then they pack the honey in there, and then they seal it up. Well, they created beehives not out of mesh, but out of special,
basically a silicone mat. If you've seen those silicone baking type things, these silicone mats that fit together, and as the honey builds up, what you were able to do is turn a lever that would actually spin them, breaking the comb, and it all in one contained system will drop out
honey from the bottom. But then it goes right back together. So when you flip the switch, it goes like this, and the honey falls out, and then you could put it back just with a turn of a dial. So all the honey falls out, boom, it's back up there, and the bees start working again or whatever.
Very, very cool.
So simple. I mean, can't believe someone hadn't done it before, but really cool stuff.
In fact, I was going to reach out to them and get them on the Building America segment, and I found out they were from Australia.
Building Australia
didn't quite work in this
thing. All right, check it out on the Twitter. Really appreciate it. You see some of the people that have been featured in the past. Doc Thompson, Skip Lacombe, in for Pat and Stu. Don't forget, Skip and I cover quite a bit of politics, debates, and also the elections on our radio program, as well as special programs, theblaze.com/radio. You can go back and listen to any of those. And then moving forward, whether it comes to the South Carolina primary coming up this Saturday or Super Tuesday coming up 2 weeks from yesterday, we're going to be covering all that stuff. In fact, usually during the debates and during elections or primaries, we tweet pretty seriously. There's a lot of it going on. So follow at Doc Thompson Show and at Skip Lacombe. New Quinnipiac poll has Donald Trump now with 39% versus Ted Cruz's 18% and Marco Rubio's 19%.
Like we said yesterday, it's over, folks. It's Trump's. Trump will be your nominee for the GOP.
I don't think you can expect him to step in it and do something wrong at this point. He's done so many things wrong. Right, there's nothing
he can
do.
Well, I mean, you say do wrong. I mean, at this point, too, with all the stuff he said, all the issues he's had, I mean, people thought back in the day when he was talking about how John McCain isn't a war hero. Oh, that's going to be bad for him. That's going to sink his campaign. How many times have we had these stories where we're like, okay, Trump's done. Trump's done. No, I'm saying it now, all declare now, Trump will be your nominee.
Here's one of the differences, too. Super Tuesday is primarily southern states. And you could look at somebody like a Jeb Bush and you say, all right, he's not going to do well in the southern states. Or, you know, used to be you'd say, okay, it's Iowa, so obviously the evangelical or the more religious candidate's going to do well in Iowa. This type of candidate will do better in North New Hampshire, something like that. But Donald Trump has bridged those gaps. There are crazy people that support him in all these different walks of life for the same reason. They're pissed off. That's what it comes down to. So wrong or right, love him or not, it's probably Donald Trump's. And I think a lot of people going, well, it takes a long time to figure this out. I think Super Wednesday, the Wednesday after Super Tuesday, you're going to know who your nominee is, and I think it's going to be Donald Trump. That's my prediction. Donald has a new ad out.
No, this is him.
Is this him?
Yeah, this is him speaking actually yesterday.
Okay, that's an ad. Okay.
Recently, too, obviously, at the last debate, too, he'd garnered a lot of criticism for saying that it's completely George W. Bush's fault for 9/11, and that if he were president, he would have prevented 9/11. He's been continuing that diatribe as he was in South Carolina recently yesterday. I have a little bit of audio of that for you now, too.
In 1998, Osama bin Laden declared war on the United States. If Donald Trump had been president of the United States in 1998 instead of Bill Clinton, what would you have done?
Well, first of all, I think the World Trade Center would be standing, I will tell you, because if you read my book, The America We Deserve, I have a whole, you know, paragraph or two about Osama bin Laden. And one of the big hosts of one of the shows said, I don't believe it. You know, Trump was talking about Osama bin Laden 2 years before the World Trade Center came down. Now, I wasn't even a politician. I was a business person, like a lot of you people. But I've always been very interested and fascinated by it. And I saw this guy, and I watched this guy, and I read about him, and I said, he's trouble. He's big trouble. And believe me, I would have done something about it. The other thing is the terrorists that knocked down the building. If you look, the terrorists that knocked down those buildings were in Florida and different places, and they were all working on flying and working on different things. If that had happened with me, it wouldn't have happened with me. We would have had strong policies in place where they wouldn't have been here. They wouldn't have been in the country. Certainly many of them wouldn't have been, and we would have somehow found a way to stop it.
Okay, so he's saying that he would have stopped it by somehow finding out a way to stop it. It wouldn't have happened because I would have let it happen. We would have stopped it by finding a way to stop it. These things happened, they wouldn't have happened under my presidency. What do you mean by that, Donald? Here's the deal. He says this kind of BS and nobody actually asks him about that. Why or how? This is true of everything that he has said on every issue. No, it would be better because I'm in charge of it. Well, how are you going to do that? No, it's because it's going to be me. It's going to be better because I'm running it. You have not laid out a single thing on what you would do for any of these things other than it's me doing them.
I know what it is.
What's that?
The terrorists, they love me. They love me. It would be huge. They wouldn't have done it because I'm very popular.
Nobody likes Ted Cruz. The terrorists don't like Ted Cruz, okay? He's a liar and the terrorists don't like him. Terrorists love me. Everybody loves me.
That's my frustration with this too. Listen, if you like Donald Trump and you're willing to overlook his past, fine. Got it. But when it comes to stuff like this, how do you explain away him not actually telling you how he's going to do all of these miraculous things? At least Bernie Sanders puts forth a bogus plan that won't work, but at least he tells you how he's going to do it, right?
By the way, speaking of Bernie Sanders, though, on the Democrat side, things are a whole lot tighter. Hillary Clinton does lead Bernie Sanders 44% to 42%.
And by the way, if Bernie Sanders is going to get it, which I think he will, he's going to have, because of the superdelegates, even greater numbers than just a tight race. He's going to have to really be higher. Thanks so much for joining us, Doc and Skip, in for Pat and Stu.